Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we're going to be learning about the halachas of forbidden foods. This is going to be divided into three sections because it is a long section in the Ketzer. This is Siman Memvav, the 46th chapter. The Ketzer takes a lot of the most practical, pragmatic aspects of the halachas of kashrus and he puts them into this Siman. There are going to be obviously many other different parts which we'll see later on as he divides into different topics. But for now, what we're going to be looking at today is the topics of blood and milk and meat. Those are two topics that he's going to be discussing. These are actually found in the Shulchan Aruch in Yoradea, which is a section of Shulchan Aruch which is usually not studied by the average layperson, which is why it's important just to get a sense of the halachas. So let's jump straight in. First is the halacha of blood. The Torah tells us a number of times that we are not allowed to eat or consume blood, and that's the blood of animals, the blood of birds are not allowed. The Torah says, in fact, the statement, ki adam hu anafesh, the blood is the soul, and that's where the vibrance of a person seems to be, that when a person is killed, they bleed. Rav Aryeh Kaplan, in his footnotes on the Derech Hashem, has an interesting observation where he suggests that it refers to the neural pathways, the synapses, because that is obviously, at the time the Torah is describing it, the human beings did not discover this yet, but the easiest way of describing that is the sensory system, the blood, which is expressed, as people can see as the life form in blood, but whatever it actually specifically means, the practical halacha is we're not allowed to consume the blood. So a few basics that we're going to deal with. We're going to look at 9 questions when it relates to blood. Number one is, what about blood in eggs? If I find blood in eggs, is it a problem? The answer is, it is a problem, and that blood cannot be consumed. What about the rest of the egg? So let's say I remove the blood spot. Is the rest of the egg able to be eaten? So egg on the yolk is an issue because it could be embryonic blood, and therefore that would be disqualified, and the egg should be thrown out. If it's egg on the white, there's a debate. If it can just be removed and the egg is fine, depending on where and how deeply it's embedded. Is this true today? So the truth is that today, most eggs that you're buying from the store are not fertilized eggs. The blood is not a reflection of an embryo. It's less of an issue, technically speaking. However, because eggs are much cheaper today and are in much more availability, our practice has been to throw out the egg to avoid the concern. If the egg was added to a batter already, and then one sees, before one mixes it in, that there is a blood spot on it, one can take out that egg and throw it away and it is fine. How does this affect my cooking? So this means to say I need to check my eggs before adding it to the batter. What about fish blood? Is the blood of fish a problem? The answer is no. However, if you separate it and squeeze it out into a cup, then it is a problem, unless there you put scales around it or some sort of sign to indicate that this is not the blood of animals. What if I have a sore in my mouth and I bleed and I see that when I pull out the piece of bread that I'm eating, there's blood on the bread? So that part of the bread needs to be removed. What does that mean? Does that mean I need to spit out everything in my mouth because there's blood in my mouth? The answer is no. If the blood is piresh, that means it's separate, it's already on the bread, you need to throw out that bread. If the blood is still in my mouth, it's not separated from my mouth yet, I can swallow that blood as well. This often happens when a person has a bloody nose and it goes backwards through one's nasal cavity into one's throat. A lot of times one would be swallowing blood in those cases. It has not been piresh, so it's not a problem. However, on Shabbos it is a problem because sucking blood is an expression of the melacha of Chabala, which is the tolda of Chabala, and therefore it is a concern, and one should not be sucking the blood even internally on Shabbos as well. What happens if I was milking a cow and I see that a few drops of blood are expressed in the milk? Is it an issue? The answer is yes, and a shaila needs to be asked in those cases. So this is the most practical aspects of blood. Now, concept number 2 is milk and meat, and that's what we're going to be dealing with for the rest of today. We're going to look at 21 basic questions. So, we know that the Torah prohibits eating of milk and meat together. It says this 3 times, Lo Tavashel Gedi B'Chalev Imoy, and it's framed actually in the interesting concept where it sounds like something which both the milk and the kid goat are both products of the same animal. So the Torah is emphasizing, even though they're so close in this case, they're from the same mother, nonetheless, they are not allowed to be mixed together. And there are 3 concerns because it's mentioned 3 times. Number 1 is cooking them together. Number 2 is eating them together. And number 3 is getting benefit from them together. Generally speaking, a lot of kosher or non-kosher only relates to eating. Bas v'chalav relates to cooking and benefit as well. Few basic questions. Is chicken included in this? Answer is yes. Rabbinically, it is forbidden to be eaten. However, the Isra Hana is not there. The prohibition of benefit from bird meat and milk is not there. If I mixed milk and meat, is there a problem of getting rid of it? So the answer is, I certainly need to get rid of it, but I need to be careful about getting rid of it in a way that I don't get benefit from it. So for instance, I may not sell it. I may not give it to my dog to eat. I may not give it as a gift to somebody, because these all incur benefit that a person is getting. If I'm eating or consuming milk, can I sit down at the same table as somebody, a colleague who's consuming meat? The answer is not, unless there's a separate tablecloth, a separate table, a placemat, or if there's some sort of heker, some sort of item that's in between the two people which will distinguish the two. What happens if the two of us really just don't get along? So we're not going to be talking to each other, we're not going to be eating with each other. The halacha is still the same, one still has to have that separation. What about sharing a cup for drinking? So the same cup may not be used by somebody who is eating meat and somebody who is drinking milk, because obviously when one drinks, one leaves little particles of what one is eating on and or drinking on that cup as well. What about the same loaf of bread? So a different loaf of bread needs to be used for each milk and for meat. This sometimes happens when I have a challah on the table for at my meat table, and then I want to use it for cream cheese on Saturday night, on Motzei Shabbos. In that case, one has to be careful. Generally speaking, the halacha is, if it is sliced up, one should be careful not to use those slices for the opposite orientation. However, if it was a loaf, then the outermost slice, if it wasn't touched, doesn't have any marks on it, the outermost slice should not be used for milk, but the new slices would be all right as well. What about salt? So in the old days, they used to have salt dishes and people would dip into those. So it obviously cannot be the same for milk and meat. But our practice today is even with salt cellars that one sprinkles on top to have separate ones. And this makes so much sense, because people have all these greasy hands. Just watch people at the table the next time and see what they're doing with their fingers. Or maybe it's a better idea not to. But if you look at what people are doing with their hands and then what they touch afterwards, so it's a good idea to have a separate salt shaker. And I would include in this ketchup containers or anything else that's going to be on a shared condiment that is going to be used for meat and milk. What about utensils? So people should have separate utensils for milk and meat, and they should be marked as such. Technically speaking, the marking should be on the milchik. So meaning, if let's say I'm not marking both, I'm just marking one, it's sufficient to have a mark on the milchik and know that anything marked is milchik and anything not marked is fleishik. Generally speaking today, it's so easy to mark things, so we have labels and colors, and it's much easier, different sets of dishes and flatware. If I ate meat, can I consume milk afterwards? The answer is no. One needs to wait 6 hours. The Kitzur is taking the opinion of 6 hours. There are another two opinions of 1 hour. That's usually the Netherlands, and an opinion of 3 hours. 3 hours is the more minor of all of these, and a person should not be doing this unless it was their family minag. That was from the times. It seems to be that it came from the times when the meal, it's the Gemara says that one needs to wait misa'udah l'sud, in the times in the winter where the closest meals were between lunch and dinner. Dinner was at the time of darkness, and darkness could have been 3 hours after lunch. Then that might be what it is. But generally speaking, 6 hours is the default. If a person is a Baal Shiva or a Ger and is coming in, they should be doing 6 hours. What if I had chicken soup, but there were no chicken in my bowl? Do I become fleishig? The answer is yes, you do. Why do we wait? So there's two reasons for waiting. One is because there might be meat which gets stuck in one's teeth, or another reason is because of the oil of the meat which gets caught in one's esophagus and remains there, and therefore the taste of meat is still there, which is not the case when it comes the other way around. What happens if I found meat between my teeth, but I'd already waited 6 hours, and there's still this annoying piece of meat between my molars? So you can remove it, and you do not need to start waiting 6 hours again. 6 hours starts from the end of the meal. What if I ate something just cooked in a meat pot? There was no meat in it, it was just a meat pot. Even if the pot was used in the last 24 hours, the answer is, I do not become fleishig. However, I should not eat that with dairy. So oftentimes you'll have the situation where cookies, biscuits are baked in an oven on, let's say, it'll be in a fleishig oven or on a fleishig tray, as an example, and it's clean. Then in that case, I may eat those cookies, those biscuits, but I should not eat them with milk dipped into my coffee, but I may drink the coffee right afterwards. What if I ate cheese? Do I need to wait? The answer is no. One needs to clean one's hands or check them, and needs to wash one's mouth out as well. However, if a person ate hard cheese, which is defined as anything which took more than 6 months to ferment or to produce, then one does not need a weight. Usually it's a concern. Parmesan cheese, which is not melted, is a problem, and one needs to wait 6 hours after it for eating meat. Do I need to clean my dentures after eating hot milk and then about to eat meat? And the answer is no, because we assume that the temperature that of liquids or solids put in one's mouth would be lower than the necessary temperature to create bleois absorptions into it. As long as it is cleaned, like one cleans one's teeth, one washes out one's dentures, then that would be sufficient to be able to change the orientation afterwards. Can I eat this in the same area I just ate milk in? The answer is yes, but the table needs to be cleaned beforehand, or a new tablecloth needs to be put on it as well. Can I use the same knife for bread, for milk and meat? The answer is no. If the knife was clean and I already used it, so if it does not make the bread fleishig, but if the knife was used to cut an onion, so even if the knife was clean, we assume that it brings back the taste or the absorptions, which could have been even 24 hours old, and therefore would make that onion fleishig. That onion cannot be cooked with milk, and that becomes a serious concern. That's only something which is davar charif, a sharp substance. Am I allowed to drink almond milk at a fleishig table? Answer is yes. Almond milk isn't really milk. It's a nice advertising ploy. It's almond juice. But because it looks like milk, one should have something which indicates one should keep the almond milk bottle on the table, so that people are aware of the fact that this is not real milk. Can I kasher a meat pot from milchik or fleishik to milchik? The answer is no. You're not allowed to kasher from milchik to fleishik or vice versa. This was a gezeira, a edict which was issued in order to avoid people just keeping one set of dishes and then going backwards and forwards and mistakes which will inevitably be made. So I'm not allowed to kasher from one to the other. Are there any exceptions? The answer is yes. There's a few exceptions. So if the pot or the fork or the knife is treif, I can kasher it from treif to kosher. So if, let's say, it is milchik, I cannot make it fleishik. But if it's treif, I can make it neutral and then reorient it as well. Some have the minhag to make a treif to do this. That is, in many poskim's eyes, seen as a distasteful activity. But other options are, one can do libun. So let's say one puts it in a self-clean oven and puts it at the highest temperature. That would be able to be done, even to reorient it from milk to meat. And this is done all the time. Another option is kashering it for Pesach. When one's allowed to kasher for Pesach, reorient it from vleishig to milchig, and then just leave it through to the rest of the year. That would be sufficient as well. With this, we conclude some of the basics of basa v'chalav. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful